Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Becholotcha. This week is also the time for everyone who likes to sign up for things at the last minute, because now is the last minute for the seminar, the Executive Learning Seminar at Pardes in Jerusalem, July 2nd through 6th. The title this year is Returning to Zion, New Faces and Old Issues. So now's the time to sign up, cash in some frequent flyer miles. There's lots of planes coming here every day, and come join us to study at Pardes in Jerusalem. A quick overview of the seminar this year is that when Persia became the dominant power in the Near East in the 6th century BCE, royal edicts allowed and even encouraged Jews to return to Israel and rebuild the temple. Ezra and Nehemiah were two outstanding figures who embraced the opportunity, and they took on leadership roles. Ezra became the priest, a scribe, and served as the spiritual leader of the people. And Nehemiah was the lay leader. His role as governor of Judea was to not only rebuild the city, but to establish and minister a functioning Judean province. The challenges they faced were formidable. Physical danger, political intrigue, intermarriage, assimilation, ignorance, and apathy. During the seminar, we'll examine Ezra and Nehemiah, their historical milieu, the issues they face, and the methods they use to resolve them. We'll study biblical and rabbinic texts to explore the fascinating historical period. Classroom study will come to life through field trips to local archaeological sites. And as we explore the parallels to our present reality, we will ask, what can we learn from their experiences to make this third return lasting and enduring? Don't miss out. Now's the time. Sign right up. Get on a plane. Come here. And it will be great to see you. This week, Becholotcha with Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Becholotcha. In our parsha, the Jewish people leave Mount Sinai, begin their journey on the way to the land of Israel. Unfortunately, those people who began the journey do not make it there. A whole generation dies in the desert. And in fact, in our parsha, beginning with chapter 11, although even before that perhaps, we see a series of sins which ultimately bring about this tragedy of an aborted mission. And today I would like to examine what went wrong and to explore how perhaps this was not just a one-time phenomenon, but something which is endemic to the human condition. So let us begin by looking at chapter 10, verse 11. It was in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month, that the cloud went up from above the tabernacle of the testimony, and the Jewish people journeyed from the Sinai desert, and the cloud dwelled in the desert of Paran. And they began their journey by the mouth of God through the hands of Moses. Whenever I read this section in the Beit Knesset, I have this feeling of a festive moment. The cloud goes up. The trumpets are sounded, as we see in chapter 9. Everyone is positioned. Everyone is poised to now begin that journey, the journey to the promised land, the journey to their destiny. When we look at the first 10 chapters of the book of Numbers, we see how all of the preparations are being made for the Jewish, for that journey. We begin with a census of all the males above the age of 20, who ostensibly will be the ones who will be waging war. We then go on with a census of all the Levites, two censuses, one of the Levites above the age of a month, another of the Levites between the ages of 30 and 50, the Levites who have been entrusted with the care of the tabernacle. We have a whole description of the arrangement of the camp. The tabernacle is the centerpiece of the camp. The tabernacle which has the cloud, which has the pillar of fire. The tabernacle, which is, as we've said in another podcast, the perpetuation of the revelation at Sinai. The tabernacle, which is the ongoing manifestation of the presence of God in the midst of the Jewish people. The organization of the camp is done in such a way, to use the words of the Nitziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, that the camp of the Israelites has become the chariot of the divine presence. It's as if we are carrying the throne of God to bring it to its proper abode, its everlasting abode, in the land of Israel. And after all the details have been put in place, as we just read in chapter 10, the Jewish people begin their journey. So what went wrong? Let us begin by looking at chapter 10, verse 33. And they traveled from the mountain of God, a three-day path, and the Ark of the Covenant of God journeyed before them 3 days to seek out for them a resting place. The pasuk seems very, very innocuous. It describes how the Jewish people are traveling for 3 days, how the ark actually is traveling before them in order to find a proper place for them to stay. Interestingly, one of the classic commentaries, the Rashbam, notes that they were actually traveling for 3 days, and he says, which was a tiresome journey. And perhaps that's what begins the problem. I will come back to this point in a few moments. Instead, I'd like to look at Nachmanides, the Ramban. Nachmanides quotes a very interesting midrash, which says, commenting on the phrase, they traveled from the mountain of God. They traveled b'simcha, with joy, like a child that is running away from school. And as Nachmanides goes on to explain, what is their joy in running away? That they will be able to somehow avoid being burdened with more commandments. So let's begin with this interpretation. First of all, it's based on the fact that the mountain is referred to as the mountain of God, as opposed to the way we generally refer to it, which is Mount Sinai. And as Nachmanides explains, it's precisely because this is the mountain of God why they're happy to leave. Which means that the first crack in this beautiful structure that's been built in the opening chapters of Bamidbar, of the book of Numbers, the first crack is an attitude, or what we would say a problem of attitude. When the Jewish people begin their journey, we would imagine that the attitude would be, oh, it's so great, it's so exciting, that we will finally actualize our destiny. The excitement should be the anticipation of what will be, of the actualization. And instead, the way Nachmanides describes it, is that the excitement is running away. The excitement is a result of the feeling of being overwhelmed, of being confined, one might say suffocated. The excitement is to just get a breath of fresh air, which means that the image is this I-thou relationship with God perhaps is too much to take. Maybe it's good to create a certain distancing. So maybe I'll begin with the fact that perhaps the first issue, the first crack, as I said, in this beautiful structure, is the difficulty of sustaining an intense experience. The difficulty of sustaining a commitment to a relationship, even where that relationship can be something extremely positive, but it's draining. It's exhausting. There's this feeling that the people have. We just need out. There isn't anything that they've done wrong, so to speak. It's much more the need to run away. Which then brings us to the next step. And that's the opening verse of chapter 11. Where it says, "And the people were kimit onanim, evil in the ears of God. And God hears and God becomes angry and fire goes out and consumes the edge of the camp." And the key word in this sentence is kimit onanim. And this is when the people begin their journey. What does that mean, kimit onanim? A number of commentaries, Rashbam, Sforno, Ramban, to name a few, see the root of this word as being onen, onen, which has to do with pain, suffering. The people are in pain. The people are troubled. What is it that they're troubled by? Well, Rashbam and the Sforno picks up on it. They're troubled by the difficulty of the journey. And as I mentioned earlier, the Rashbam says, here they are traveling for 3 days. That's tough. And I imagine that people who are trekking or go on hikes, when you travel for any extended period of time and you don't necessarily rest, that can be very, very difficult. Interestingly, it says that the people are kimit onanim, which the Sforno picks up on and says that it wasn't that they were really miserable, because he says there wasn't any objective reason for them to be miserable, but they were acting as if they were miserable. And the Sforno says they were doing that to be provocative, which I'll come back to in a minute. But I want to maybe look at what Nachmanides says, where Nachmanides says, and again, if I take this comment following his previous comment, the people were excited to leave the mountain of God. They wanted to run away. Enough. Too many commandments. It's overwhelming. Suffocating. They're excited to run away, but not necessarily excited to make the journey. And in the words of the Ramban, the minute they begin making the journey, all of a sudden they realize that they left the frying pan for the fire. Which means, okay, we've left the mountain of God. We're no longer going to be burdened by more commandments. But where does that leave us? We are now journeying through a huge and awful desert, which is terrifying. How are we going to eat? How are we going to drink? How are we going to survive the heat of the day, the cold of the night? And if I perhaps add this kimit onanim, there isn't an objective problem when they journey, but it's all their imagination. They create anxieties. They stress themselves out, which if we think about it is a very common phenomenon. Very often people find themselves in all kinds of situations and then begin imagining the worst. And as they imagine the worst, they lose it. They freak out. They're taken over by their fears. It's very interesting that if I take this interpretation, so it seems to be, if I combine the two statements of the Ramban, there's something in the human condition about having a feeling of being overwhelmed. Overwhelmed by responsibility, fear of the unknown, the idea that I'm not in control of my reality, but there's something else which is in control. And now let's get to the next part. This is chapter 11, verse 4. V'hasafsuf, the riffraff that were in their midst, desired a desire. And then they caused the general Jewish population to cry. And they say, who will give us meat? We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt. We remember the squash, the water, the melons, the onions, the garlic. Which means the next step is desire. And once again, I would point out, this is in the reflexive, hit'avu. Perhaps they create a desire. They create a need where there is no need. And if we look at the next verse, perhaps that will give us an indication of what's at stake here. They say, and our atan afshenu yevesha, our souls are dry, ein kol, which can be translated as we have nothing or we don't have everything. And they continue, all that we have is the manna to look to. This ambiguity reflects perhaps a very profound idea. The idea that if I don't have everything, I have nothing. The idea that no matter what I have, I'm never happy with it. There's always something else which I want. And if I can't get that, then whatever I have is worthless. To put it differently, there's something in the human condition where people have a capacity, a knack, to just be unhappy, to make themselves unhappy, to always be looking for something which is perhaps either beyond their grasp or something which in the end, even if it were within their grasp, may not really be what they need or what will ultimately make them happy. This idea of desire is something which already appears in the Garden of Eden. As we've noted in other podcasts, God actually tells Adam and Eve to eat of all the trees in the garden. It's not just an allowance. It's actually a prescription. Eat, surely eat from all the trees. One tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil you can eat from. It's that one tree. If I don't have that one tree, there's nothing else which makes it worth my while. I mean, I could imagine that there were thousands, if not more, varieties of fruits to eat from in the Garden of Eden. And have they exhausted all the possibilities? But it's more the principle. It's the forbidden fruit, which is what I want. It's the fruit which ultimately is not what I really need, but what I desire that does me in, which is what happens with the Jews. What is it that they desire? They desire what was in Egypt. They're not necessarily looking at what they have now or what they will potentially have when they come into the land of Israel. But it's this nostalgia, which is an inversion of the reality of what was once upon a time. That's what they desire. There's a very interesting rabbinic comment which says, when they say that we remember the fish that we had in Egypt for free, chinam, so the question is, but did they really have fish freely in Egypt? Weren't they slaves? Did they have that, what you might call, life of luxury? And the rabbinic comment is, free means free of any restrictions, free of any requirements. There were no strings attached, no mitzvot attached. So the rabbis see that what the people want is, I don't want to be confined in any way. I want things on my terms, not on God's terms. If I sum up what we've just done, it seems to be that the Jewish people have been given all of the means to come into the land of Israel, to actualize their destiny, but somehow they become their worst enemy. They become the impediment in their journey, I would say, to self-actualization. They are overwhelmed. They create anxieties where there's no need for anxiety. They have a feeling of entitlement. They're not looking towards what is it that ultimately they really need, but what is it that will somehow fulfill those illusory desires? What can we learn from this story? And as I said, this is not just a story about the Jewish people in the desert, but seems to be a recurring human phenomenon. Perhaps this says something about an orientation. an orientation which sees that ultimately the purpose of human existence is to take on responsibilities, to embrace them, to embrace relationships that are intense, to not necessarily look to run away, to not create anxieties where there's no objective cause for them, to not create desires which can only be substitutes for what we really need and will never satisfy what we really need. To end on a positive note, in chapter 11, chapter 12, 13, we have a description of a series of sins which the Jewish people do, which ultimately result in a whole generation dying in the desert. But in fact, if we go back to chapter 9, we have a very matter-of-fact description in verses 15 to 23 of what would seem to be the norm of travel of the Jewish people during the time that they were in the desert. And the verses describe how when the cloud would go up, the Jewish people would embark on their journey. When the cloud would come to rest, the Jewish people would encamp, irregardless of how long the cloud was traveling, how long the cloud was encamped. The Jewish people would follow that cloud. And as the Sfurno on verse 17 notes, the repetition of all the verses, the detail of all the different circumstances of how they would go traveling, is to the credit of the Jewish people, to show how they followed God in the desert. Who is this Jewish people that we're talking about? Well, in retrospect, we know it's not talking about the generation that left Egypt, but ultimately the generation that would come into the land of Israel. A whole generation that grew up in the desert, that somehow learned the lesson, which therefore shows that although the Jewish people who left Egypt, when they had their moment of truth, when they had their opportunity, as I would say, to regain paradise, dropped it, another generation came up to the plate and succeeded. Ultimately, what we do is in our hands. We can make a reality, we can break a reality. We can actualize an ideal or turn a paradise into a hell. It's our choice. It's our responsibility. It's ultimately our goal as human beings to step up to the plate and to realize what we're capable of doing. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.